For a century, Aboriginal workers were invaluable to the development of the Kimberley pastoral industry, but the wages didn't match the work. As Archie Roach sings, flour, sugar, tea was all they gave to our family. Before you hear about a new push from the Kimberley to recover those wages, here's some stories from ABC Radio, beginning with the Wave Hill strike of 1966.
Here in the vast outback, 600 miles south of Darwin, I listen to allegations of deprivation and inhumanity, of Aborigine claims that on some stations they live like dogs in huts they have to crawl into. Their food, salt beef and damper. Aboriginal leader Dexter Daniels wants wage equality now, not, as the court said, by December 1968.
Well, it's a long time to wait. I think we shouldn't wait. We want the money now.
You want the money now?
Yes, by 1968. Too long to wait.
The pastoralists say, hey, we're employing some of these fellas, we don't want them taken away, so that the state then accepts a token commitment to regulating conditions and trying to avoid the grosser forms of exploitation.
And that means, in effect, then, does it, the system that develops up to 1965, where the pastoralist accepts social and food responsibility, looking after responsibility, but pay is really an ad hoc arrangement?
Pay often doesn't happen at all. The conventional stereotype is they don't know the value of money and they don't need it. And as old MP Durax alleged to have said, well, of course, and we'll take damn good care they never find out, won't we?
The old stockmen, the old native stockmen, they were the one that grew the land and grew the station. For pastoralists, managers, owners that own the station, they should get the regret, because they're the one that, you know, started the station for them and got the cattle industry going with sale cattle and that in the beginning.
We'd get a few bob or something, a couple of dollars or something like that, just to, you know. It wasn't the proper wages, like. It was just something to satisfy us, like to get your shirt, trousers and boot, hat and things like that.
The Kimberley is different from the Northern Territory and Queensland. The government's relationship with the pastoral industry is different. After the Second World War, most other states in Australia began to apply assimilation policies, provision of services to Aboriginal people to assimilate them into European society. In the Kimberley, the government decided to segregate Aboriginal people on stations. So they reinforced the pastoralists' position as the patron of Aboriginal communities. And it's a key point that makes the Kimberley different, is that the government withdrew from supporting Aboriginal people outside pastoral stations.
What was the motive in doing that?
They wanted Aboriginal people to stay on their land. There was a recognition that Aboriginal people were settled and reasonably settled on their land. The primary motivation was that they didn't want Aboriginal people coming to town. It was economic. They really didn't want to provide them with services in towns. They didn't have the infrastructure in such an isolated region. The towns were small country towns. They didn't have schools for such a large number of children. They didn't have many hospitals. There has been a recognition from very early settlement that pastoral industry will provide a home, not just a job, for Aboriginal people. So the West Australian government decided not to interfere with that relationship. And that's partly because the pastoralists in Western Australia had such a strong relationship with the government. They were the government for a long time. So making decisions within the Pastoralists and Graziers Association, one could reasonably accept that it would be implemented as policy fairly soon.
But when the work started, we were going from there and never stopped. Droving kettles, mustering and branding, because we were the cheap labour. Aboriginal people were the cheap labour.
Cheap labour. Some of the voices over the years on ABC Radio about wages in the pastoral industry. The state announced a stolen wages repatriation scheme in 2012, but it limited claims to those people who had worked on government missions and hostels, who were born before 1958 and were still alive, and to a maximum payment of $2,000. The scheme didn't cover the pastoral industry, thus excluding a large number of ageing Kimberley men and women. However, a petition's going to be presented to the state government in June. The Kimberley Community Legal Service has started it. Judy Harris is a solicitor at the service. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. Why a petition on this matter, Judy Harris?
Well, so the background to the petition is the type of thing that you've just recounted in the pieces that you've played. In fact, I just wonder whether I even recognise some of the voices, even though some of those voices are back in 1968. Some of the people that were at Wave Hill might be actually listening to this program this morning, down at home and community care in Kununurra and possibly other places in the Kimberley, other places in Western Australia or the Northern Territory. So if people think that the Aboriginal people involved in Wave Hill have passed away, that's not the case. So those people and many people like them were on the receiving end of the Western Australian government's stolen wages scheme, which you've just described, and responded to that scheme as an insult, as a humiliation, as totally inadequate. And have been trying to get the government to listen to their opinions. So the petition is the next step or another step in this process of Aboriginal people wanting the Western Australian government, and for that matter the federal government, to listen and to sit down and to negotiate, because that's not how the Western Australian government's first stolen wages scheme proceeded. The government came up with a figure and said, well, here it is. We'll give you this. You don't have to give up your rights. We're not apologising to you. So take it if you care to take it, and this will be the end of it. So the whole way that the scheme was administered was offhand. It was experienced as humiliating. And so now we have the petition. So the petition is calling for a second and better attempt to try and get this right. To try and rectify what's happened in ways that Aboriginal people are willing to accept and want to accept.
Part of this petition is about the effect that the 2012 scheme limits has had. From people you've spoken to, what are they saying about the effect of those limitations?
Well, the term stolen wages, which the government applied to the scheme, actually acted as a lightning rod. So whereas the government decided that stolen wages referred to income that was withheld when people were living, Aboriginal people were living at missions or hostels in Western Australia, many people in the Kimberley and other places heard the word stolen wages and immediately related it to their experiences of working in the past and either not being paid or not being paid the same rate as non-Aboriginal workers. So basically an uprising occurred where Aboriginal people affected expressed themselves. Many of them put in applications to the stolen wages scheme, hoping that the government would see what was happening and recognise that they had missed a whole important category in the scheme, and that those people at least would have received the $2,000 which was on offer. But the government didn't take up that opportunity, and about 700 or 800 people, the majority of whom were on stations, were knocked back for that reason.
The Community Legal Service is also calling for a new Aboriginal stolen wages reparations scheme. What would that entail, and how much could that cost?
So what would that entail really depends on what's involved in the process that Aboriginal people require as the victims in this whole situation, as the survivors in this whole situation, for them to receive the thing called reparation. So The first stolen wages scheme was officially called the WA Aboriginal Stolen Wages Reparation Scheme. It didn't deliver that to the satisfaction of Aboriginal people. So what's actually involved, it depends on the government changing the way that it's approaching this issue and sitting down with Aboriginal people and starting to talk and starting to listen properly. How much might it cost? That is not something that could even be predicted at this stage. So one of the things that has come through very clearly from a lot of the Aboriginal people who have expressed themselves to us is that they require recognition. And recognition may or may not come with a financial price tag. So recognition is an important issue for all of us. So we like to be recognised for the contributions we make and for the work that we do. And same thing obviously applies to Aboriginal people. So it's premature to be thinking about or even worrying about how much might this cost. It's nowhere near that.
But so I could well imagine that government will be worried about how much it costs, because they'll be the ones that ultimately would be required to pay if this new reparation scheme went through. And you say that 700 people got knocked back from the first one. And even if there was a $2,000 payout to each one, that is still a lot of money for a government that's crying poor at the moment.
Well, is that a lot of money? So I was actually quite impressed the other day when I heard Tony Abbott tell us all to think about the Commonwealth budget, which is going to be released next week, from the point of view of everyone's common interest rather than for us as individuals. So there's different ways of looking at this, and there's also issues about what contribution in kind and monetary the Commonwealth should be making, because the money that was withheld was wages, yes, non-payment and underpayment, but also Aboriginal people in Western Australia and elsewhere were made to be ineligible for the social security payments of the day that non-Aboriginal people were eligible for. So there's that issue as well, which directly involves the Commonwealth. It involves Western Australia because of how they administered funds that came from the Commonwealth. So there's a lot that actually needs to be talked about. I'd also like to say that one thing that hasn't featured in Western Australia in relation to this whole debate, which is mentioned in the press release that was put out by our legal service yesterday, is the issue of human rights. Human rights didn't feature in the Stolen Wages Task Force report, which the government received in 2008 and sat on until 2012. The terms of reference didn't require the task force to even consider the human rights of Aboriginal people. So there's a bit to be discussed around that issue, as well as Australia's obligations under International Labour Organisation conventions. So there's things like Australia having agreed that it would not participate in the use of forced or compulsory labour, and that it would not allow public authorities to use compulsory labour for the benefit of private individuals, which might be said to be stations.